Okay, guys, let's kick off. Well, like I say, I will try and make a point of starting dead on 9 because there's a lot to cover. This week we're going to do a lot more listening, so I'll warn you in advance, we may not get through all of the listening that I want to do. So what I'll do, I'll put together our Spotify list. Well, I've already put the list together. What I'll do, I'll share it on my blog. So any listening that we don't get around to, I suggest that you spend a bit of time listening through some of the examples. We've only got time really to listen to some of the excerpts of the examples of the music today anyway, so you might want to listen to some of the examples in a bit more length. So, where we've got so far, just as a quick recap, we started off with a session which was more to do with why musicology, a little bit about the history of musicology. Then in week 2, we moved into the idea of the song, the arrangement, and track. So hopefully you've got some idea between the differences between those three paradigms. The song being the abstract entity, the track being the final recording, and the arrangement, which is exactly what it says on the tin. It's a particular setting of a song. And then what we did last week, I introduced you, or in some cases, reintroduced you to the elements of music. And what we did, we went through a selection of elements, about 10 of them. And what we did, we prioritized them. We used them as a starting point for musical analysis, where you can listen to some music, and what we hopefully discovered is that some elements are more important than others. And what you could begin to do, just as a way into analysis, is listen to a piece of music, have a list of elements, and then just discuss, brainstorm in your own mind how the elements of music are operating in that particular piece of music. What we're going to do this week, we're going to continue with that, looking at how the elements of music can actually create interest in a song or a composition. As I say, we're going to spend more time listening this week, but just quickly before we do that, be honest, okay? Who read the Sam Hawkins article? Let me see who did it. I'm not going to bollock anybody, I promise, but what I'm going to say is just please try and get on the it. It's for your own benefit. If you just come to these sessions, you're only getting sort of a fragment of what you need to do. Just try and get into the habit of reading. So a few of you did. The article, if I can just quickly show you it, it's right at the top of the blackboard list. And you know, it's actually quite an easy read, to be honest. It's not a difficult read. But what's really good about it is it sort of includes all of the things we've spoken about so far. It's got an example of a form chart, it talks about various elements, and it's just a really easy to understand first stab at how you could approach musical analysis. So what I'm going to say again, if you haven't read it, read it. How long did it take? Half an hour. It's not much of your time, but you will benefit from it greatly, I promise you. The other sort of things you'll find in the article is it has got a form chart. It talks about things like what particular chord tendencies are. So how chords resolve and why they resolve, which is another dimension we've not actually got around to yet. But also, it includes a paragraph on the use of the recording studio, which, again, where does that fit in our three-tier analysis model? Remember we talked about the production, the text itself, and its reception. The use of the studio comes into the production side of things. Not a huge amount of research has been done in that area of how particular artists use the recording studio. And I think it's an area that needs more. There's space for more work in that area. And what it also does, which we're not really going to be looking at for quite a while, but it also looks at the potential meanings of the music. What does the music mean? It talks about that. So, as I say, it sort of encapsulates everything. So I suggest you read it. What I would normally do there is I'd normally have a discussion about it, but to be honest, if you don't read it, we can't. So, when I give you things to read, try and read them. Okay, so just sort of kicking off with this week's session, let's just talk to start off with about musical form. Now, if I just say that as a terminology, what's the first thing that comes to your mind? What is it? What do I mean by form? What's the form of music? Pardon? Yeah, so the structure of music. And what sort of vocabulary would you use to describe that at the moment? If I got you to listen to some music and describe the structure of a piece of music.
A, B, C's, things like
that. Yeah, you could talk about it in terms of A sections and B sections and C sections. They're quite often called rehearsal marks. They're quite often used if you use a lead sheet in a rehearsal, you go take it from section C, known as rehearsal marks. But there's an even more common terminology that we use for describing form. What would that be? I'm worried if you don't know what this is. I'm beginning to get concerned. Like, as music progresses through time, okay, and if I said to you, describe it, what would the terminology be? I'll give you a clue, right? The first bit could be an intro, like the introduction. You could have like a 4-bar intro. And then what other things are you likely to see after that? I'll hear after that. Yeah. Yeah. That's it. So you get verses. And this is popular song is made up of this, isn't it? It's made up of intro. Many songs have got an introduction. Usually you would get a verse, but occasionally it starts with a chorus. And it's good to know what these general tendencies are so that you recognise this when you hear music. Does it fit in with the norm? Or is it unusual? So, yeah, usually you will have an introduction. Normally it will start with a verse, although sometimes it starts with a chorus. It will have a verse and a chorus. Quite often the verse and chorus will be repeated twice. This is the usual tendency. And then somebody mentioned middle eight. Yeah, you get a... You get a section which some people call a bridge, and quite often you'll get a verse and a chorus, possibly a key change after the bridge. These are sort of, and then you'll quite often get an outro, which in recorded song is quite often in the form of a fade out. You know, when you see bands live, they don't do that. They sort of find a way of ending the song. But when it is a recorded song, normally there's a fade out, and there's practical reasons for that. So they're the general tendencies that you get in song. And as I say, it's really useful to be able to spot and begin to listen to song with a sort of a horizon of expectations. Is what you're hearing the norm, or does it break the norm? Is it unusual, or is it commonplace? Because these are expectations that your audiences are going to have. You need to be aware of them yourself. Okay, so yeah, we've talked about that. What we haven't spoken about is that, again, I'm speaking generally, most popular song is made up of 2- and 4-bar phrases. And what we'll do later, in a couple of weeks' time, a few weeks' time, we'll look at how that works with melody. With melodies tend to be built up of question phrases and answer phrases. But just the sections that we're talking about, the introduction, the verses, the choruses, they tend to be symmetrical. They tend to be in 4- or 8-bar sections. But there are exceptions to this, and we'll come on to this. Have you noticed this? Can you when you listen to music, I think we did this a couple of weeks ago, you almost know, even if you haven't heard the song, you know when the chorus is coming in, because you've got this inbuilt sense of coming to the end of the 8th bar, it's going to be a change. There's an expectation in that.
Now, what I did last year, I tend to do this every year, but I can't obviously go through each year. Last year, these were examples of songs that were in the top 10 that used what I call the rule of four. We'll listen to some of these, some other examples in a second. And had a listen to the top 10 just a couple of days ago, okay? And all of these records fall into this category, okay? And we'll listen to some of these so you can hear what I mean. Let me say, I don't listen to the top 10 most of these things, okay? I tend to do it once a year for this session. I think it's important to do this because it's, this is the sort of commercial end of the popular music industry, if you like. And it's interesting to consider how these songs are put together in terms of form. So let's just kick off by listening to, let's start off with what was number one a couple of days ago. Justin Bieber. And we're not going to listen to it all the way through, but what I want you to listen to is the sections, okay? The various sections. How long do they last? And can you tell when they're changing, even if you haven't heard the song before? So we're going to intro. So, how many bars does this sound like it's going to be for an intro? 8. Sounds like it. It is. It sounds like an unusual form to me. I expect intro, verse, chorus, middle eight, you know, that. And I think what you find in the charts these days is different setup, actually. It's changed. Let's listen to another one. What's the second one I want to listen to? Let me just quickly check. Right, okay, let's listen to this one. So this was what number was this the other week? Was number 4 a couple of days ago. What's happening here? We can't listen to more. Listen to a couple. Right, okay. Let's just make sure it's going to work. Let's listen to the One Direction track. I was having a few problems with this before you guys came in. I don't know why this is... Let me just try again.
Computer says no.
Computer says no.
There we are. The one who brings flowers,
but right, let's listen to this from the start. So it's got the intro.
I might never be nice shined armor.
3.
I might never be the one you take home to mother.
5.
And I might never be the one
6.
Who brings flowers.
7.
But I can't be the one, be 8. The one tonight.
4.
second verse. We'll do a different texture. Three. That's a great bars. You can hear the song so beckoning. Five. Six. Seven. And you know something's going to change here. I've only heard it once. Three. Good boys. Two. End of the chorus. Back to the bridge. Oh no, we're in the chorus. But it's still a last day for us, isn't it? There's the chorus. Five. Six. Seven. Eight.
Let's start
back
right now.
I don't know, we have a little one bar sort of. And you see, what happens is, if you begin to listen to music with this critical eye, critical ear, I should say, you'll notice that certain traits will happen. Like, well, that song there, they put an extra bar after the chorus just to add a little bit of interest. And you'll pick up these sort of production techniques, quite often where texture is used as the main form of interest because there's so much repetition. And what I would suggest you do, I've not got the time to do this, but what I would suggest you do is listen to these. I'll put the Spotify list up. I know for some of you it might be a painful experience, okay? I've seen some of you go, don't want to do that. What I would say, you know, the guy who ever wrote that One Direction track is making huge sums of money. You might not like it, but you cannot deny it appeals to mass numbers of people. And, you know, I know a few people who you wouldn't believe how old and grey they are who write some of these things. They don't necessarily like the music, but they do it because it generates income. And I think if you're going to enter certainly the commercial side of the music industry, you need to think of it like that. So I'll suggest you do all of these songs in the top 10. So how many is there? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. The 7 of the top 10. All of them fit into what I call the rule of 8. They've all got 8-bar sections or 16-bar sections. There may be variations in the verses and choruses, and there might be the occasional one bar on the end. But generally, they all fit into that category. So, spend a bit of time listening to them and get used to analysing that sort of stuff. Now, what I would argue is, okay, that is what's happening in 2015. It's no different from what's happened over the last 200 years. Music's always done that. Western music has always done that. So, you know, you listen to... we go back and listen to... a little bit of Elton John. There's the intro. Four.
It's a little
a four bar intro.
This feeling inside.
You just tell me, you know when the chorus is coming in.
Those who can
easily
hide.
Five.
Don't have much money, but
six.
Boy, if I. Buy a big house where
eight.
We both could live.
Probably going to remember when this is going to repeat the verse, isn't it? One.
If I was a sculptor.
Same format. Then, same.
But then again.
Exactly the same.
Or a man.
Three.
Who makes potions and travel and show.
Five.
No, it's not much, but it's the best.
Six.
If
we
don't,
if you don't learn this, you know there's going to be a change here. There's going to be a chorus.
And you can tell everybody this is a song.
End of the First World War, there was a famous singer called Vera Lynn in the mid-40s. And the big sort of song at that time was We'll Meet Again. You'll hear... This is the formula. This is the intro.
verse.
Meet again.
Two.
Don't know
three.
When. Don't know
four.
When. But
five.
I know we'll meet
six.
Again. Some sunny day.
Seven. Eight. Yeah, it's going to be repeated. You get the idea. It's the same formula.
And even listening to Mozart.
Here's a different section. And the red bar's long. Six. Seven. He adds an extra couple of bars on. Back to the verse, what we would call. These formulas have been going on for hundreds of years, and because of that, the general public are, even if you're not a musician, you're tuned into this, you know, you have an instinctive understanding of what popular song format should be, certain conventions, and usually they're what we call the rule of eight. We want to listen to things in 4, 8, 16 bar blocks. That's just the way in the West that we're tuned.
I'm speaking about Western stuff here. Western popular music. Now, occasionally you will get music, and what I want you to think about is, do you get this in mainstream pop music now?
But you haven't got to look very far outside of the mainstream to find loads of examples of people who break those rules.
You know, listen to a quick example of this track by the Civil Wars, for example.
And see if you can work out what form it's in. You'll hear it's not in the usual rule of eight. So that's bar 5, 6, 7, 8. So just try and work it through. 2 verses, and you perhaps will use it. So what it does is it ingrains interest on a subliminal level, I would argue, with the general public. They don't think, oh, there's a 6-bar verse there. But the interest is coming from somewhere. There was no difference in the texture there. The texture was exactly the same, but the number of bars was an 8-bar verse followed by a 6-bar verse. So the interest is coming from the measure of the music. I'm not going to play this, but I listened to the top 10, as I say, a couple of days ago, to look for examples of this. In the top 10, that's the only example I could find where it's actually been a 9-bar verse. If you listen to it, you'll hear it's got an 8-bar verse followed by a 9-bar verse. What it is, you know, something going all the way back to Motown in the 1960s. Where just an extra bar is added onto the end of a verse to create a little bit of interest. So they're sort of using that technique in this. As I say, for those of you coming in a little bit late, what I suggest you do is perhaps listen to all of these things. I'll send you a Spotify playlist. You haven't got the chance to listen to everything, but I suggest you listen to it away from the session.
Okay, just bear with me.
Okay, so what we've spoken about so far is the expectations that I set up with this idea of what I've called the rule of four. And occasionally, you will find examples of pop music that breaks that rule, where it moves outside of that. You get things like 7-bar verses or 9-bar verses. What I want to do just to move on is to consider some other ways that you know that a section is coming to an end and another one starting. Does that make sense? Because we know when we, hopefully I've made that clear, that we've got this sort of innate ability to spot when 8 bars comes to an end and another 8 bars starts. You know it's a new section. But how else do you do that? And what you find is, these are the ways that songwriters and arrangers tend to do this. One sure-fast way of doing it is just to play around, plain and simple, with the texture. So the texture determines what the form of the music is.
If you listen to this example by the Beach Boys, I'll play you a little bit of it, get as far as we can. Hopefully it's going to play. We'll get there. Yeah, I've got no idea why this is going on.
I swear I can hear it a tiny bit.
Trying.
No, it is there. It's very quiet. If anyone's heard Pet Sounds, it's off the album Pet Sounds. Just coming out of there. I don't know what's going on there, but hopefully you can hear. You hear that each section is the same, and what happens is the form just, the texture changes on each repeat. So there it's repeated, but backing vocals at this time. It's a masterpiece of music production, this. It really is. You hear the next one. So it's got no variation, it's just the same thing repeated, but the texture changes. Can you throw button bubbles now?
Okay.
So, what I'm going to ask you to do at the end of this session is, with all of these examples that I'm giving you, I'm going to ask you to, I think I'm going to do it slightly different this year. I'm probably going to put you into little groups with 2 or 3 people, and I want you to go away and think about some of these things and come back next week, and we'll talk about them. So far what we've talked about is the rule of 8. So, music wants to be in these 8-bar sections. We've talked about how music could perhaps have no variation between verse and chorus. You just have a verse repeated time and time and time again. But the texture creates the interest, so you know from the texture that it's a new section. And what you can also hear in some music, there's only one example that I'm putting down here, but sometimes you can tell that a new section has started because there's a difference in the rhythm. It's just a difference in the, by rhythm, I mean just the rhythm that the individual instruments are playing. I'll play this and hopefully it'll come back through these speakers here. I think what I'll do next week, I've got a little beatbox, I'll bring it in and I'll YouTube it across because it's more reliable. See if we can hear this. Let me try this. Yeah, it just isn't playing, is it? I don't know why that's happening. So if you get a bit of the rule of 8 with this, then you can tell you something. Yeah. with the Foo Fighters, actually. That's a really basic example where the rhythm changes and you know that you're into a new section. What you'll find with them as well, they quite often use different time signatures as well. But you'll find, you may not spot it, but you'll find 7-4 bar, 7-8 bars, for example. So you know you're in a different section because the actual time signature is different. We'll come on to that a little bit later. I think harmony is such an obvious one, isn't it? By harmony, what I mean is chords. So we're listening to the music through time. And what would you expect to get? What would you consider in your experience the norm to be when you get the chords? Would you expect the chords to be the same or would you expect them to be different? So you come to a chorus. What would you expect? What would you expect?
Different chords.
Who thinks different? Who thinks the norm would be different chords? So you're coming up against the chorus. I'm interested. Who thinks the chords would be different? Just put your hand up. I'm curious. But who thinks they'd be the same? And obviously some people don't know.
Because you'd expect them to be different, but then you'd be surprised that those of them aren't the same.
Yes. And this is what I'm trying to put across to you, you see. What I really want to encourage you to do as you develop as musicians is develop an awareness of what the norms are. What the norms are. In popular music, you know, you could analyse probably 100 tracks, and I would say probably 80 of them would have different chords for the chorus. Although, having said that, it may depend on the time frame, i.e. when you analyse music from the 90s, analyse music from today, you might find that that's a bit of research, for example. You could do that as a project. Is it different over the last 10 years to what it was many years ago? But generally speaking, I would say the sort of classic song format, you would certainly expect the chords to be different in the chorus to what they are in the verse. And as you say, though, you do find that there's exceptions to that. And what you're going to do, you've got to obviously be able to spot them. Because what's the challenge you've got as a listener and as a songwriter if the chords are the same? If the chords in the chorus are the same as what they are in the verse, obviously there's the potential of boredom, isn't there? It's got the potential of being boring in a listener. So you've got to find interest from somewhere. What's the obvious way to find interest? If anyone knows any of these songs here,
you should be loud in the chorus.
You could play around with dynamics, for sure. You could play around with the texture, like we've already seen. There's an even bigger one, which I think all of these do. They all do. Bit of a different melody. You'd have the same chords, but you'd have a different melody. The melody would change. And it needs to be a really distinctive melody, because you've got no interest coming from the chords themselves. So probably the archetypal example of this would be Stand By Me by Benny King, where, you know, if you listen to a little bit of that, hopefully it's going to play. It's basically a 1-6-2-5 chord progression, and it just repeats. You go verse, just listen to the chord. You don't need to know the Roman numerals. Obviously, you can hear the chords are repeating. That's the main thing.
No, I won't be afraid. No, I won't be afraid. Just as long as you stay. Stand by.
Chorus, yeah?
So darling, darling, stand
by me.
Stand by, stand by, stand by.
did he mark out the chorus there? He had a different melody. Yeah. Yeah, he added some additional instrumentation as well. These are things that I think as musicians, we hopefully do them intuitively. You know, but it's quite often different when you do something as a songwriter. I know I've always found it really interesting, don't do it so much these days, but many years ago, analysing my own compositions. I did that for a PhD a little while ago. And it's amazing the stuff that you incorporate that you don't know that you're incorporating. You do it intuitively, you know, with no theory, nothing. You just do it because you like the sounds of what you're doing. But you go back and reflect on it, and it's amazing the sort of logic that you probably will find that with the work that you do yourself. So these sort of things are intuitive, but what I'm trying to encourage you to do is to spot them, to be able to recognise them, and to think how that adds to the sound of the song, how that adds to the interest of the popular music song. And it comes down to more listening, I think, with many of you. I don't know, I know Mike, last year, did you get Mike O'Hara's session, The History of Popular Music?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that, the intention of that module is to introduce you to music that have gone back 50 years or whatever. I think it's really important as musicians to have an appreciation of how the music that you're listening to has been influenced by the past, because it doesn't exist in isolation. So what you can do then, for example, you know, going back to this example here, you know, you can listen to a Benny King track, and you can link it in with All Along the Watchtower, or even All About That Bass by Meghan Trainor. It's the same compositional principles. You recognise them. But you know that it doesn't exist in isolation. It doesn't just exist here. It's in Nirvana, it's in Hendrix, it's in Benny King. You need to listen to music with a critical ear to spot these things. And, you know, you can call it musicology. That's quite a sort of an intellectual name, if you like. But I just think it's just, you know, understanding how music works. I think everyone needs to be able to do that if you want to appreciate music and be involved in music in any shape or form. It's really interesting. I put both of these slides here actually by mistake. Because I would normally ask the question, between the verse and the chorus, I would suggest you would always expect a different melody, wouldn't you? You come to a chorus, the melody is always different in the chorus. And to be honest, it was only last year that somebody pointed out this song. And it's the only example I've heard so far. It's a challenge to you guys to see if you can find one. I've been trying for years to find just this one example where you get to a chorus and the melody for the chorus is the same as what it is for the verse. Very unusual. Very unusual. Listen to a little bit of this and hopefully you can hear what I mean.
You can burn my clothes if I'm gone. Or you can tell your friends what a fool I've been. And laugh and joke about me on the phone. You can tell my aunts, go back into the barn. You can tell my feet to hit the floor. Or you can tell my lips, tell my fingertips. They won't be reaching for you no more. Don't tell my heart, my favorite part. I just don't think it understands. And if you tell my heart, my aching, breaking heart, he might blow up and kill this man.
Very unusual line. Be really, really, yeah. Yeah, it's got a bit of some backing vocals in it. But sometimes it's interesting, certain types of music, I think the blues is one of them, and this is a sort of a derivative of the blues, you get more license to repeat.
Like, you know, the blues, if you listen to sort of a Robert Johnson blues, for example, or certainly a Robert Johnson-influenced blues, it's broadly 12 bars long, and it'll just repeat. And it'll have no choruses, and it'll have very little difference in texture. But you're sort of given the green light to just repeat, and it still sounds authentic, and that sort of comes from that. But there's a challenge to you. See for next week. Can you find another song that has the same melody for the chorus as what it has for the verse? I'd be amazed if you could. That's the only one I've found in quite a few years of looking around. And actually, I didn't find it. Somebody else pointed it out for me. A lot of what we've been listening to so far... has been sort of pop music, if you like. Not popular music, in its broader sense, but we've been listening to music that is sort of written for mass consumption. And I've been thinking about this during the course of this week when I was preparing for this lecture, especially after I'd spent a bit of time listening to the top 10, and how similar so many songs fit into that rule of eight in the top 10. And it made me think, well, you know, you go back in time, listen to some music that was in the charts a few years ago, and how that music was actually more experimental, certainly with meter, with time signatures. I don't know how good you are at spotting time signatures, but well, let's just listen to a few. These were a few examples that I came up with. You know, this was a sort of a mid-80s song. I think the Gorillaz song's probably pushing 10 years old. And the Foo Fighters doing what I said, between 7-4 and 4-4. Let's just listen to a few examples of this. So, start off with Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. Probably notice if anyone uses Spotify, there's no Beatles on there. I would like to have played you the Beatles version, but they're so sort of strict on their copyright. There's just no... I don't think it's on iTunes either. I don't think they've licensed it to be beyond CDs, or unfortunately. But Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. See if you can spot the time signature change. This is Elton John's version. It came out about 10 years after the Beatles version, in the mid-70s. So what time is that in? First time we've heard this time signature so far. Yeah, it's in like a 3 or a 6. Still got about 3 feet or 6. Well, they could be. Pioneers in playing around with time signatures and also unusual bar lengths. Quite often I think the commercial impact of a lot of the music, you tend to think it was quite basic, but you listen to it deep down, it quite often wasn't. They'd be playing around with these unusual... And here's a track by Gorillaz. Can you hear the five?
Yeah.
say, if you're not used to spotting unusual time signatures, you need to practice it. If you spot something that's unusual, spend a little bit of time just breaking it down. The fives tend to be quite easy to spot, although that one...
So is that song named after the time signature?
You get that a lot. You get that a lot in music. Quite a few. I haven't got time to play all of these, but the Foo Fighters track, for example, changes from 7-4 to 4-4. So you know that you're coming into a new section because the time signature changes. And what I would argue is this is in the lineage of this. You know, this is what I'd be looking for when you're writing an essay, to show that you can sort of join these gaps. You've got an understanding of music, because you can make connections between different types of music.
The Kate Bush track, see if you can spot that. I'll quickly play you that.
About, if it was informing something about the songwriter,
makes them stand out a bit more compared to musicians.
And why?
Just because they're experimenting with their sound and stuff.
To me, it sort of makes, and I might be wrong, but it gives me the insight. I sort of think they're better musicians. They're good musicians. Because they sort of understand things like time signatures. I find the same with when I hear complex harmony. I think, they've got a good ear for harmony. Be more experimental. There's so many songs that aren't in 4-4. I thought about this yesterday. But so few in the charts. None. Zero in the charts. And this is something to think about, I would suggest. You know, you listen to your sort of music. And in particular, I'd be interested in listening to chart music. Whereas in the mid-60s, like I think Money, everyone heard Money by Pink Floyd from Dark Side of the Moon? That, certainly, I mean, the album was huge, but this was a single, and it got into the top 10 in the States, and it was in 7-4 time. I'll play you an example of it in a second. I can't remember when this came out, I should have checked, but the band Outkast, it probably came out way before your time, but probably about 12, 13, maybe 15 years ago. It's 4-4-4-2, and then two bars of 4-4. Well, listen to that. Simply Red, this track, listen to these, you'll hear them. Nick Drake from the mid-60s, if anyone's heard any Nick Drake, he was a sort of a singer-songwriter, just him and an acoustic guitar. An example there of 5-4. I've listed a whole load of examples that are in unusual time signatures. Some of them, if I've had time, I've jotted them down. Others, I haven't had time, and I've not jotted them down. There's another example of probably the most famous piece of music that was written in 5-4.
It's named after...
It's named after the time signature again. Take 5 by Dave Brubeck. In a really clear 5-4. But listening to the Pink Floyd track, for example. I thought I'd copied this across. Where is it? Oh, I know where it is. Hang on. I've put it into a separate playlist. Let's listen to Take 5 while I'm looking for it. And hopefully you hear the 5 when it starts.
see if you can hear it. Believe it or not, this is the top 10 hit in the 50s. Mainstream hit. The 5 is quite pronounced on that. 1, 2, 3. What about this? Peter Gabriel, the singer out of Genesis. And 7. There's countless examples. I haven't got time to play them all.
Are those public playlists, various
other things? Pardon?
Are those public playlists, like 500?
I've put together a playlist of all of these. I'll put them up on my blog, and I'll send you the link to the blog so you can listen to them on Spotify.
And just spend a bit of time getting used to what they sound like. I mean, other examples. Kiss from a Rose by Seal. Again, before your time, but it was Batman. I think it was Batman. That is all over the place. Say a Little Prayer by Aretha Franklin. Living in the Past by Jethro Tull in 5/4. Again, that was a mid-60s track. Top 10 hit in a 5/4 time signature. So why did we not get that now? Why did we not get that experimentation with time now? You're doing the album charts, but why not in the pop charts? I don't know the answer. I mean, it could be a computer generation where everything is in 8-bar sections, 4-bar, 8-bar sections. Could be.
Are you worried to release it in case it fails?
Yeah, high pressure on one of the record sales. I don't know the reason, but it's a hypothesis I've noticed that to me. A little bit like I'd be interested in you finding out if there's any songs which have got the same melody for the chorus as what they have for the verse. I would be very interested if you could find a single record in the last 5 years that wasn't in 4/4 or 3/4.
There's one company out there that is busy. I think it's called Fondant. And it's called
I'd be interested to hear that. Well, perhaps what you could do with that, I'll put this post up on my blog. I'll let you know I've done that and just put a comment in, because it would be good to hear that. I'd be curious to hear that because it's very unusual. But yeah, that's good. It's good to hear that. And what you find as well, there's some examples for you to listen to. Does anyone know what I mean? We're coming towards the end there. Anyone know what I mean by polyrhythm? You ever heard that word before?
Where there's a prominent rhythm in the drums and the guitars?
Or where there's a...
two really strong rhythms in the song, like from an instrument?
Yes. That's right. It's where you've got basically, what it is, broadly speaking, it's two time signatures put against each other. A few years ago, we had Ed O'Brien from Radiohead in here. I interviewed him in the Zendon, and I spoke to him about this. So how Radiohead do it all the time. And interestingly, they don't actually know what the time signatures are. They just experiment with two different rhythms, put them together, but not aware of the fact that it's like 7/8 over 5/4 or whatever. But listening back, Led Zeppelin will do that. If you listen to Kashmir, for example, see if you can tell me what's going on in this track, Kashmir. Sorry, it's in a different playlist. Let me just find it. There it is. So what's happening here? What's the difference between the drums? Anyone spot?
What's going on there? Yeah, so the drums are in four. The drums are in four. And yeah, the strings or the guitar is in, yeah, some sort of three. One, two, three, one, two, three, one, two, three. So what you've got is one, two, three, four, one, two, three, over the top. Listen to it again and see if you can hear it. Two. Like I say, bands like Radiohead are probably the most famous bands doing this sort of stuff. But Zeppelin were doing it a long time ago. If you listen to this version of Black Dog, now here I've got to say I know there's 5-4 and 4-4 going on, but listen to it and you hear that there's something just not right with the timing. Listen to the drums and the guitar. Cover bands covering the song. No one could play it. No one could play it exactly the same. But, yeah, again, that's an interesting compositional technique. Okay, listen, to finish off, I'll put this up on Blackboard with the recording. Put a little blog together. What I would like you to do, tell me what I'm going to do. I'm going to put you together in sort of, because I want you to think about this, and I want you to come back and perhaps spend 20 minutes talking about this next week in your groups. I'll not get you to come up here, but just get you to talk about it if you sit in the same seats. Let's see. Let's say you four. Say you four guys. Are you two on your okay on your own? You two. What about you four? You four. You three. And you two? Yeah? So what I want you to do is this. Okay? I want you to listen to the top 20. Listen to the top. I'm going to force you to do this. Listen to the top 20.
Every time. Or just five. Right?
Well, what you might do is sort of listen to snippets of it and see if you can, you know, you might just have to listen to them all the way through. But what I'm interested in are what we've spoken about in the current top 20. Tell you what, why don't we say, I've looked at the top 10, why don't we say 11 to 20? Yeah? So 11 to 20. And let's say examples of how rhythm delineates form, harmony, melody, time signatures, texture. That's it. Okay? I know this is small, but I'm going to put it up in Blackboard and see it. And what I would also like you to do, so that's for the top 20, 11 to 20, do that. Come back in your groups and just talk about it, and we can just play things if we need to. And what I would like you to do as well is just see if you can think of any examples, good examples of uncommon time signatures and even polyrhythm, examples of polyrhythm that I've just had there. Played a couple of Zeppelin examples. So all you're going to do, what I'll do, I'll put a blog post together. Perhaps put some comments up on that to start off with. You could do that individually or as a representation of your group. And then what we'll do when we get back together here next week
We'll just spend the first 20 minutes of your lesson, perhaps you just tell me what you think. So some of it related to the top 20, and some of it just related generally to these sort of musical traits that I've been talking about.